Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have two stories related to flying. Scientists say some bird species are in danger because their natural habitats are disappearing. We will have more on that story later in the program. But first, drones are flying robots that people use for fun and for work. More and more jobs involving drones are created every day. Now, some U.S. universities are starting drone classes and degree programs. But some new laws make drone piloting difficult. Pete Musto has more.
Flying robots, called drones, may be one of the most important technologies of the future. The number of jobs for people who know how to design, build, and control them is increasing. Because of this increase, several U.S. universities and colleges started offering degrees in unmanned aerial systems, or UAS. One of these universities is the University of Washington in Seattle. Christopher Lum is an aeronautics research scientist with the university's Autonomous Flight Systems Laboratory. Lum helps students explore how civilian drones can safely share the skies with regular aircraft. Ryan Volek loves the 3 years he spent in the flight lab. One of the coolest parts is working with industries and all the cool technology we work with. It is definitely an opportunity that a lot of students don't usually get, he said. Ward Handley is seeking a master's degree in aeronautics and astronautics at the University of Washington. When the drone program first began, he did not think it was a good idea. I decided, no, I do not want to work on drones because of the privacy issues, he said. Drones can be used to invade people's privacy. But when an offer for a paid position in the drone lab appeared, Handley changed his opinion. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, is creating new rules to control the use of drones. The FAA is the part of the U.S. government that controls air travel and traffic. A new FAA law requires drone owners to register their drones. All drones must be registered in a government database by February 19, 2016. People who do not register their drones could face fines of up to $20,000. Changing current rules may present problems for students looking for drone pilot experience. One problem for many schools' unmanned aerial systems programs is finding a legal place to fly. In Seattle, University of Washington student Alec Buing showed off the place where his department tests the drones. It's just a big room that we move the tables and chairs out of. If it happens to get out of control towards the windows, we reduce any damage, he explained. Lum explained why they test drones inside a building. He said it takes a very long time to get official permission to fly outside. The federal laws are a little bit restricting. We need to register our aircraft. We need to get what is called a certificate of authorization, Lum said. That process can take months. The FAA wants to replace its current way of examining requests to register drones. Now the FAA looks at each case differently. The organization wants to create a national rule for civil UAS and UAS used for business later in 2016. At this time, Kansas State University is the only school with permission to offer unmanned aircraft flight classes to students outside, an FAA representative wrote. The FAA selected Kansas State and 15 other universities to be part of a national academic research group called the Center of Excellence for UAS. The group will receive federal money to expand research and training. Lum and some of his students recently moved their research to Australia. Australia has fewer rules governing UAS. A professor at Western Washington University also took his department's drones to Canada for the same reason. I'm Pete Musto.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA, Learning English. Researchers tracked the paths of migratory birds. They found that certain bird species may be passing through dangerous areas. Dan Friedel has the story.
Scientists say a huge percentage of bird species are in danger because their habitats or homelands are disappearing. Traditional migration paths take birds through countries that are not protecting locations to stop, rest, and feed. The scientists studied the migration, or flight paths, of almost 1,500 species. They decided that 91% of them passed through dangerous areas. The major danger for migratory birds is development. Building and paving has covered over nature where birds stop and feed as they move from one part of the world to another. For example, a bird called the bar-tailed godwit migrates from its breeding grounds in the Arctic. It flies all the way to the southern hemisphere in Australia and New Zealand. Along the way, the small birds stop at Yellow Sea mudflats in China, North Korea, and South Korea. One of the scientists who worked on the study says, "Many of these critical sites have been lost to land reclamation owing to urban, industrial, and agricultural expansion." The problem, according to the investigators, is that many of these small birds die along their migration because they don't have a safe place to eat and rest. There is no place to restore their energy for the next leg of their journey. They simply perish along the way, says one of the scientists. Countries in North Africa, Central Asia, and those along the coasts of East Asia are having the most difficult time conserving land. The scientists say these countries do not have enough areas that are safe for birds. In addition, many of the sanctuaries do not overlap enough with the paths of migrating birds. One species that is now extinct is the Eskimo curlew. "Our world gets poorer every time we lose a species," one of the scientists says. The researchers say countries need to work together and come up with safe stopover areas for birds that pass through their boundaries. For example, one country might have preserved safe zones for migrating birds, but a neighbor country might not. A bird might perish. One scientist who is not involved in the report tells the Los Angeles Times that while some habitats are changing, more work can be done to make urban areas safe for birds. He says small changes, like planting more native plants or keeping cats out of areas birds would be likely to use, could make a big difference. The journal Science published an article in early December by researchers from the Center of Excellence for Environmental Decisions in Australia. I'm Dan Friedel.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Graphene is a type of graphite mineral. Experts often call it the material of the 21st century because of its special properties. Some U.S. companies are already using graphene for new technology products. Graphene is often described as a one-atom thick layer of carbon. The material has some extraordinary properties. It is 100 times stronger than steel of the same thickness. The nearly transparent material also carries heat and electricity very well. Dan Schaefer is vice president of the manufacturing company Vorbeck Materials.
This material has so many potential applications that you don't know where to start to look in the beginning.
Mr. Schaefer says 100% pure graphene is difficult to make. But he adds manufacturers can make graphene of lesser purity that still has many of the features of the pure version. Mr. Schaefer says his company produces a layer of graphene that is 80% pure. Graphene can be mixed into ink for printers. Stretchable parts can be printed for products such as antennas for radio frequency identification circuits. Louise Brooks is the manager of the product development team at Vorbeck Materials. She says graphene can even be used on wearable electronic clothing. She says the clothing can be washed and dried in a machine without damaging the graphene. The new material can also be used to make very sensitive microphones. Ray Sauro is a chemical engineer at Vorbeck Materials. He says a graphene membrane less than 1 micron thick can pick up vibrations that no other kind of membrane can.
It has a working range of less than 1 hertz to 200,000 hertz. The human ear, for example, can hear from about 15 hertz to 20,000 hertz, so way beyond anything you can hear.
The microphone picks up the sound from light that reflects off a vibrating graphene membrane. This prevents any radio or magnetic interference. Mr. Sauro says graphene membranes can resist vibrations and heat. He adds that the membranes are not costly to manufacture. Mr. Sauro imagines the automotive industry will be able to use graphene products in vehicles to collect information about engine health. He says such products would not cost more than $300. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Give us a like on the VOA Learning English Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter, at VOA Learn English. You can also watch videos on the VOA Learning English YouTube channel. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In March of 1889, Grover Cleveland left the White House after 4 years as president. He had been defeated by Benjamin Harrison. As they were leaving, Cleveland's wife, Frances, spoke with a member of the White House staff. She said, I want you to take good care of everything. I want to find it the same when we come back, and we will be back in 4 years. Frances Cleveland was right. She and her husband moved back into the White House after he became president again in 1893. Grover Cleveland is the only man to serve 2 terms separated by the administration of a different president. This week in our series, Shirley Griffith and Frank Oliver begin the story of Grover Cleveland's second presidency.
Grover Cleveland did not want to be president again, but he was worried about the future of the United States. He did not think President Harrison could solve the serious economic problems the country faced. President Harrison had approved very high taxes on imports. He also had approved an increase in the supply of silver money. Grover Cleveland said both actions had hurt the economy. He also feared that Harrison was not strong enough to oppose the demands of special interest groups in the Republican Party. Cleveland believed he was the only Democrat who could defeat Harrison. He won his party's nomination, and he was easily elected to a second presidency.
Grover Cleveland immediately turned to the nation's economic problems. The country seemed headed for a serious depression. Only a few days before Cleveland's second inauguration in 1893, a major railroad failed. Then, another big company declared failure. This set off a selling panic on the stock market. In the next few months, almost 8,000 businesses failed in the United States. 400 banks closed. 1 million workers lost their jobs. The prices of farm products fell lower than ever before, and thousands of farmers, unable to pay their debts, had to give up their farms.
Experts offered a number of different reasons for the depression. Some said it was a plot by members of the stock market to ruin farmers and seize their land. Some said it happened because American factories were producing more goods than people could use. Still others said the problem was caused by the government's money policy. For many years, the United States and other nations used both gold and silver as money. Paper money was used to represent a nation's gold and silver holdings. The value of silver was tied to the value of gold. In the United States in the early 1800s, 15 ounces of silver had the same value as 1 ounce of gold. This value did not change until after 1860. That was when mines in the western United States began to produce large amounts of silver. The extra silver caused the price of the metal to fall.
In 1871, Germany declared that it would no longer support its paper money with silver. Instead, it would use only gold. Other European countries quickly did the same thing. The United States did too. In 1873, Congress passed a law that stopped the government from using silver as money. Western silver producers protested. They put great pressure on lawmakers to change the law. 5 years later, Congress passed a compromise bill. The compromise bill said the government could issue limited amounts of silver money. It said the government must buy $2 million worth of silver each month for that purpose.
12 years later, during President Benjamin Harrison's administration, Congress passed a new silver purchase bill. It said the government must buy 4.5 million ounces of silver each month. The Treasury Department would buy the silver with new paper money that could be exchanged for silver or gold. The new law increased the amount of silver money used in the United States. The country soon became sharply divided on the issue of silver money. Wealthy businessmen and bankers did not want to use silver money at all. They wanted the country's economy to be based only on gold. This was what was known as the gold standard. They believed the gold standard would keep the value of the dollar high. Using silver, they said, made the dollar less valuable.
Farmers, laborers, and others wanted to use silver money, and they wanted an unlimited supply of it. Without silver, they said, the country's money supply would be too small. Gold would increase in value. People who had borrowed money would be hurt. They would have to pay back loans with dollars that were more valuable than those they had borrowed. President Cleveland supported the gold standard. He opposed any use of silver for money. He said the United States should use only gold, as other nations did.
President Cleveland was sure the Silver Purchase Law of 1890 had caused the economic depression. He explained the situation in this way. The law had caused businessmen and investors to lose faith in the government's money policy. They were afraid their money would drop in value as more silver money was put into use. Investors began to withdraw their money from businesses. Banks began demanding early payment of loans. Everyone wanted gold. They took their paper money and their silver to the government and exchanged them for gold. In 1890, when the Silver Purchase Act was passed, the government held almost $290 million in gold. After 2 years, withdrawals had cut that amount to $100 million.
President Cleveland and other administration officials began to worry. It was possible that gold holdings might fall so low the government could not support the dollar. Cleveland decided the only answer was to get Congress to kill the silver purchase law. Then the government could stop buying silver. It could return to the gold standard. The Congress was not in session, however. It would not meet again for several months. President Cleveland did not want to wait. He believed the problem was too serious. So he called a special session of Congress. The president did not expect an easy time with the Congress. Many congressmen supported silver money, especially those congressmen from silver-producing states in the West.
President Cleveland believed he could get Congress to kill the silver purchase law. But if he showed any weakness, the fight would be lost. Then, just before the congressional debate, he learned he would need an operation. He felt a rough spot in the top of his mouth. it got bigger and more painful. Doctors examined the spot. It was a cancer. President Cleveland asked how long he could wait to have the cancer removed. "If it were in my mouth," one of the doctors said, "I would have it removed immediately."
Cleveland agreed, but he said the operation would have to be kept secret. News from the White House often affected short-term activity on the stock market. News that the president's life was in danger could cause the nation's economic crisis to become worse. Cleveland decided to have the operation on a friend's boat in New York Harbor. Newsmen were told he was going sailing with his friend. Doctors made final preparations. They were not afraid of the operation, but they were afraid of what would happen if news of the operation were leaked to the press. One of them spoke with the boat's captain. "If you hit an underwater rock," he said, "hit it good and hard, so we will all go to the bottom."
As the boat moved slowly up the East River in New York, the doctors put President Cleveland to sleep with an anesthetic drug. Then they began the operation. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Shirley Griffith and Frank Oliver. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.